Good morning. This is Larry Warren along with Doug Wells. And if it's Monday, this must be Mountain Money. So it looks like it is. And that's the show we will bring to you for the next hour. And if you've ever had to make a pitch for anything, for fundraising for your charity, who knows, a pitch to your teenager to clean up their room, or a business presentation, we have one of the top national experts in the art of the pitch, Bill McGowan, on with us, and he will be joining us in just a few minutes. He has a book out called Pitch Perfect, How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time, and he'll be our first guest this morning, Doug.
And it's a really good book. You're going to want to listen in. It's
Doug's read it cover to cover.
Almost. I'm like 40 pages shy of cover to cover, but it's nice tidbits of what you can do in everyday life as well as business. Our second guest is going to be Mark Fisher. We know Mark here locally primarily as the developer of the Bonanza Park area, and he and a partner are doing a new project called High Star Ranch, and Mark's going to be in to talk to us about that. And then our last guest is going to be the regional administrator for the Small Business Association, Matt Verilek. Turns out, Larry, this is a Small Business Week. Mark's going to come in and talk to us about some small business activities that are taking place that listeners will be interested in. You're listening to Mountain Money on KPCW, and we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hello, I'm Allison Griffiths. As an attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo, I'm pleased to support KPCW and the community. Jones Waldo provides a variety of legal services, including healthcare, business, and real estate law. For more information, our number is 435-200-0085.
And welcome back to Mountain Money, and we have Bill McGowan on the line with us. Bill McGowan, you may remember from television, a television reporter for, Inside Edition, ABC News, others along the way, and he's moved into the field of coaching, working with clients like Eli Manning, Kelly Clarkson, Jack Welch. You wouldn't think Jack Welch, who ran GE for so many years, would be coachable, running the Fortune number one company. But and Kenneth Cole, among others of clients, teaching them how to effectively communicate. And he consults with Spotify, Facebook, Airbnb, Dropbox, all sorts of blue-chip clients, including Sheryl Sandberg, the Chief Operating Officer of Facebook. Bill McGowan, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me on. Good morning.
I guess the first question would be, who is this book for? Is this for people in the business world, or can anybody learn from your pitch?
Well, can you hear me now?
Yes, now
great.
We have the right buttons.
Good
in
morning.
The right place.
Good to be with you. I half jokingly say it's for anybody who talks. And I think that we all find ourselves in a variety of pitch-perfect moments in any given day. It could be just attending a meeting in your office where the boss may wheel around and point to you and ask you for your opinion on a project. It may be going into somebody you report to at work and giving an update on a project you're doing. It could be giving a toast at a wedding or meeting your future in-laws. You know, there are so many situations every day where what we say and how we say it go a long way towards the impression we create and what people think of our level of professionalism.
Well, pitching is salesmanship.
It totally is, but it's also a matter of saying something that's somewhat memorable and also realizing that people feel very stretched in terms of the time they have available. And I think if you're able to get to your point relatively quickly, engage people, and not go on a long, circuitous, roundabout way of communicating, you're going to have a much better result.
You know, and Bill, it's interesting because your book is laid out very much in the style that you suggest for folks, right? You get to the point fairly quickly. And one of the things I'd like to do is let's talk about, you lay the book out with seven principles. Let's talk about a couple of those. And then maybe the best way for us to illustrate some of your points is to talk about some examples. But let's start off, if you could share a couple of the principles with our audience.
Sure. Well, I'm an avid cook. My mother was Italian, so I have a principle in here called the pasta sauce principle. And that is essentially equating it with cooking. The way we talk is very similar to the way we cook. If you have a sauce on the stove in a pot, you know that if you boil that down and reduce it, it's going to have a lot more flavor. If you keep adding more water, more volume to it, it's going to be pretty bland and forgettable. And I try to stress that to our clients, that if you want to make a bigger impact and you want to have your point be more persuasive, do the work ahead of time and start figuring out what's the core of this idea, how do I strip it down to its basics and get to that point quickly. There's a great Woodrow Wilson quote where he says, if you want me to talk for 3 minutes, I'll need a week to prepare. If you need me to talk for 15 minutes, I'll need 3 days. And if you want me to talk for an hour, I'm ready to go right now.
There's a lot of truth to that, isn't there?
Absolutely.
I can add another one that's along exactly the same lines. Mark Twain wrote a long letter to a friend and at the end said, sorry, I wrote such a long letter. I didn't have enough time to write a short one.
this is something that everybody has to grapple with. We're all time starved. Our schedules are stretched to the limit. And to be a good, effective communicator, it takes preparation. You have to think it through ahead of time.
I use the term eloquent brevity, and I think there's a lot to be said for that. Another principle you have is the headline principle. Tell us about that.
The headline principle basically urges you to lead with your best thought, kind of like the way a lead in a newspaper story would be. You think about the way a reporter or journalist writes. The idea of that first sentence is not to necessarily tell you everything you need to know in one long run-on sentence, but the idea is to hook you and to make people want to hear the rest of what you have to say. And I find that this is especially true in presentations that people give and speeches. The idea of the beginning is to intrigue the audience and the listener and make them want to hear the rest of what you have to say. It's not about setting the agenda. It's not about doing your presentation the way absolutely everybody else does, which can have sort of a numbing effect on your audience. Intrigue them. In fact, sometimes even raise a slight little curiosity in your audience to make them want to hear the full explanation of what you've sort of teased them with.
You also use an analogy that I think paints a really nice picture. You say that the first 30 seconds of your presentation is like the last 2 minutes of a football game.
That's right.
What do you mean by that?
It's won or lost there, basically. And it's amazing how quickly your audience makes decisions about whether you are worth listening to for the 18, 30 minutes, whatever amount of time you're up there for.
So when you're coaching, how do you coach? How do you work a presentation with somebody to get it to conform? Because you talk with anybody, whether it's Eli Manning talking about football or Jack Welch talking about business, they know so much.
Right. And that's a curse, obviously, when you know too much. It creates almost too much choice, and there can be a little bit of a paralysis from that. I'll give you an example of a client I worked with not too long ago. He was in the fashion industry, and he was about to do a presentation on some new algorithm they were using to get better consumer insights. And it was on the surface kind of a dry topic. And he was tempted to start off with the typical mundane talking about what you're going to talk about and using a lot of industry jargon. And before I do that, let me just take a quick step back and quickly walk you through some of the, you know, it sounded like every single presentation you've ever heard. And I suggested to him, why don't you put this on very human terms? Basically, what are you trying to accomplish with this consumer insights? You're trying to figure out a way to delight your customer because you know a little bit more about them. And what we did was we came up with an analogy of starting the presentation off with, think back to the best gift you've ever gotten for a really close friend of yours and how eager you were to give it to them because you knew when they opened it, they would realize only you could have picked out something so perfect for me. And equating that with basically what they're accomplishing with this new way of doing business. And it was a little storytelling that hooked people in at the beginning. It got them thinking and mentally chewing on something instead of realizing, okay, this first minute and a half of this presentation is like the first 90 seconds of every single one I've ever heard. I can delay my engagement and pick up somewhere in the middle. You want to hook them in the beginning, and that goes back to that headline principle.
Well, and I think one of the folks that was best at an early hook and continuing to keep people on the edge of their seats is probably Steve Jobs. And it may sound a little mundane. I'm sure you're asked all the time about this. But what I'd like you to do is kind of contrast Steve Jobs with his predecessor, Tim Cook. Both, I think, give good presentations. Jobs gave great presentations. And the part I'd like your thoughts on is Jobs had the ability to connect with his audience. I would argue that Cook gives good presentations, but he doesn't connect. What is the difference between their styles? Why does it feel like when we watch Cook that we're connecting with, I'm sorry, Jobs, that we're connecting with them, but with Cook, we're watching somebody on stage, we're not connecting?
I think it has to go to the level of delight and enthusiasm that Jobs always had on display. He presented himself as somebody who was enormously proud of what he was presenting to the audience, whether it was the iPad unveiling, whether it was the iPhone. You got a sense that he was just elated at the opportunity to show this thing off.
And, although nobody says the word delight more than a presentation than Tim Cook.
Right, but there's a difference between saying it and exuding it. And I feel as though maybe it was just through a tremendous amount of rehearsal, because Jobs was a tremendous rehearser, you know, dozens and dozens of times. So I think what he was able to do was show it on his face and not have to rely on just the words to say I'm delighted. And there was a certain authenticity to that. Not that I think Tim Cook is a poor presenter. I think he's perfectly fine. But Jobs also had that ability to hook you from the very beginning. I remember one he gave years ago where he got on stage and started his presentation by saying, the year is 1982. And so immediately he's got you into a story from his first several words. And I think he had the courage and the guts to go about presentations differently from everybody else. And that's what really set him apart, not falling into this conformity zone.
You know, you've got a lot of funny expressions, and you have a glossary of them in the book. And and what Jobs was doing was the opposite of those who are ill-prepared, who tend to, have binge-talking disorder and end up tailgating.
Right.
So let's talk about that, because there are an awful lot of presentations that are just filled with gobbledygook binge talking.
Yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding that more is more in presenting, and it's absolutely not. First of all, the amount of time you present, it's been proven in studies that after 18 minutes, people's attention span starts to quickly slide down the backside of the mountain. So if there is a way to tighten your presentations, you don't always have to use all the amount of time, but sometimes people feel as though they have to fill it up with just an endless stream of audio coming out of their mouths. And that's one of the quickest ways to lose your audience, that binge talking syndrome.
And that's how you get into a verbal fender bender.
That's right. The verbal fender bender that we describe in the book is this syndrome of saying the first thing that popped into your head, which is not a good strategy. In fact, it's not a strategy at all. What you're trying to do is have a clear vision of the conversational road you're about to go down and you're about to articulate. You want to try to free up your mind to navigate not the first thought that comes into your head, but the best thought. And to do that, you have to be more selective about what you say and employ this principle that the less certain you are about the next thing coming out of your mouth, the slower you should be talking. Because your mouth is always trailing your brain as if two cars on the road. And you don't want your mouth tailgating your brain. That's a very dangerous situation. And I give a full explanation of that phenomenon in the book and how a lot of pretty well-trained people have had a verbal fender bender because they, one, aren't prepared enough, and two, perhaps they're talking too fast and fearing the idea of pausing and having a moment where there's not sound coming out of your mouth.
In fact, you use an analogy of calories and food choices. Make your best choice. You've got a limited amount of time for filler with your audio. Make your best choices. Another nice framework that you shared in your book has to do with giving feedback to subordinates, maybe when you have to give them negative feedback. And I thought it was particularly good and wanted you to share it with our audience. How do you give somebody on your team feedback that they may not want to hear?
Well, I think one of the things that's important is to somehow convince the person who's receiving the feedback that you are doing this not just for their improvement on this job, that this is not just to get more production out of them on this job, that you're giving them this feedback as an investment in their complete career, whatever they go on to do. And I think in that respect, you make the person realize that you're doing this for their benefit as well. It's not just random criticism.
I would say anybody that's a boss out there, the book is worth the price of the book is worth it just to read about how to give feedback on subordinates. I thought it was extremely well done.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
So let me ask you another question, a little bit off topic, but
yeah.
So you're a professional journalist and your book reads incredibly well. In fact, I do a long run on Sundays, and I choose a book or a topic that I'm going to listen to on Audible during my run. And I had some queued up for Sunday, and I was reading your book, and your book bumped what I was previously going to listen to, and it was really quite good. Now you chose to narrate your book, and you did a great job.
Thank you.
To have a co-author to help you write the book. Why did you choose to have a co-author?
Well, this is my first book, and I have a very healthy respect for the fact that you need to know what you're doing when you tackle a new project, especially one that I consider pretty formidable in writing a book. And in fact, interestingly enough, my co-author, Alisa Bowman, is an author who I trained years ago. She co-writes a lot of business books, but she wrote her own. And she came to me for coaching because she was about to go on the book tour. And so she actually said to me at the end of our session, wow, that was enormously helpful. You know, I think you've got more than enough knowledge to do a book. If you ever want to think about doing that, you know, give me a shout. So that's exactly what I did when I finally got to the point where I felt, you know, actually, I really feel like this is valuable stuff to share because friends and family are always coming to me and asking me, how do you think I should ask for this raise? You know, how do you think I should talk to my mother about, you know, maybe the fact that she shouldn't drive anymore? You know, there are lots of delicate conversations we have in life. And I felt like those were also a good addition to the book, beyond just what happens at work in a meeting or a presentation or even a media interview. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't staring at my computer screen with just chapter one at the heading.
Well, it turned out very, very well. Every time I went to fast forward on the audio file, just before I was going to hit the fast forward button, you'd do another headline principle and I'd get sucked right back in.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that.
You know, another good example that you have in your book is apologies and how to apologize appropriately. Mm-hmm. And you've got a big client. Larry mentioned Sheryl Sandberg earlier. And there was a snafu that happened the first time you were going to go meet the senior executives at Facebook. Talk to us about what happened and how you chose to apologize, because I think there's power in that.
Facebook, ironically, was my first client in the tech sector, and I'm based in New York City. And I mistakenly, on my first trip out to Silicon Valley, went to the address that Facebook gave me, but I went to that street address in San Francisco and not Palo Alto.
Oops.
Yeah, not a good way to start. And, you know, I'm standing on the corner of 1601 California Avenue, and I'm looking at a nail salon, and I'm thinking, there seems to be something wrong here. And in the height of my denial, I actually looked at the floors above the nail salon, thinking, well, maybe they were on the second and third floor. Anyway, of course, I found out that I was an hour away and in rush hour traffic, and my first day was going to be a pretty heavy-duty day at Facebook. So I, of course, had to touch base and reach out to the head of communications at Facebook. Her name is Brandy Barker. And I decided, listen, there's no graceful way to do this. I have to just fall on my sword. And in one clean thrust, and I texted her and I said, this is inexcusable. It's a terrible way to start the day, completely on me. All I can tell you is, you know, once I get there, we're going to have an amazing day. And, you know, I'm texting this as I'm in the cab going 100 miles an hour down the 101. And, you know, the trick is don't make excuses. Don't blame it on your assistant. Don't try to justify the fact that you messed up. Own it and then move on. And
but Bill, I want to share with the audience, that did not have a happy next step, right? I mean, everybody thinks, okay, I took blame, I got in the wrong. You
right.
could have said, I got in the only taxi cab in the state of California that doesn't know Facebook is headquartered in Palo Alto. You didn't do that. You fessed up. But the reply back was pretty terse to you, wasn't it?
It was, but I realized also that Brandy was frustrated and she needed to vent a little bit. And so I was perfectly willing to let her vent because I deserved it. And she said, this is not only a terrible reflection on you, it's a terrible reflection on me. I'm the one who chose you out of all the firms we're going to work with. And so I, you know, that was an important step in the process. You know, they're going, if they lash out and they vent, you got to take it like a grown up.
And then importantly, you told her, but when I get there, we're going to have an amazing day, which
right.
I thought was very clever and very useful.
Well, I think this is what I also coach people on when they have to accept responsibility or blame for something that's gone wrong. And you say, the typical thing is admit, yeah, that was not our finest moment, and it falls short of the standards we set for ourselves. Here's what we learned from it, and here's why we're going to make sure that doesn't happen again. You know, try to own it and then move on and project a better outcome.
Well, Bill, thanks for joining us. Great advice. The book is Pitch Perfect, How to Say It Right the First Time, Every Time, and it has the Doug Wells seal of approval. And that alone is worth a quote on the book jacket here, along with Sheryl Sandberg and Eli Manning and Winston Marsalis and others you've coached through the years. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you,
appreciate
Bill.
It. Really enjoyed that. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
And we are You know, it's blue skies, and that's all I see, but they're still predicting a chance of rain at about 50% today and tonight. Then sunny the rest of the week, getting progressively warmer until the weekend. We may be up to about 75.
And stay with us. Mark Fisher's going to come in next, give us a brief update on what he's been doing out at Bonanza Park and also talking about the High Star Ranch. That's next on Mountain Money.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
This is Sean Railton. I'm an agent with Park City Realty Group. I'm a 30-year Park City resident and a KPCW underwriter. I have been involved in the Park City real estate market since 1994 as an agent, an appraiser, and an investor. I can be reached at 649-1991 or Sean at parkcityrealtygroup.com.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. In studio with us now is Mark Fisher. We locals here in Park City, Mark, mostly know you for your work over at Bonanza Park. But you're going to speak with us today about a new project you're doing, High Star Ranch. First, welcome to KPCW. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having us.
And tell us a little bit about what the vision is for High Star Ranch and maybe starting off with where it is, because a lot of us, including myself, to date have not heard of it.
Okay, sounds great. Hello, everybody listening. High Star Ranch is in Camas, Utah. It's about 17 miles from here, where we're sitting. So you can get there in about 20 minutes by going out 248 and dead-ending at the Gateway Grill. And make a left, and it's 1 mile towards Marion.
That's a great thing about Camas, right?
Yeah.
You go to the one light, and you turn right.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. In this case, you turn left.
Turn left.
And it's you cannot miss it. There's a big ranch entrance sign and the three-rail fence that just goes forever, enclosing the whole property.
Yeah, you'll turn right into the ranch on Buck Rail Drive in honor of the fence.
And is it fully operational now?
Basically, High Star Ranch, give a little history. We bought the first property in 2005, July 2005, and then the adjoining ranch to the north in 2007. Since that time, and this is condensing many years into 2 minutes, we annexed into Camas and have built about a 2-mile road system and installed sewer, dug a well, installed a 750,000-gallon water tank. And so we're now part of Camas. Camas, if you go out there, you'll see their city limit sign has been extended northward. And we're on municipal services. Prior to the recession setting in, the thought behind High Star was for it to be a high-end equestrian community. But as we evolved through the recession in that 5-year period, we decided to change course, and that's what we're here to talk about today.
And Michelle Eastman is here with Summit Sotheby's as well. And Michelle is representing the property. And yeah, it's gone from large homes, any size home you want to build, but large homes for people who will keep their horses there and train them at riding arenas, et cetera, et cetera. What's the new look of High Star?
Well, the new look, we have several different product types at High Star. There are the cabins that are situated near the lake on the property, and those are 3-bedroom cabins. They're designed by Rick Brighton, Brighton Architectural Group. You guys, I'm sure, know of Rick. And Joe Kennedy is building the homes. And Michelle King of King Consulting is doing the interior design. These homes they're beautifully done. There's a single level with an upstairs loft and bedroom. So they're 3 bedrooms, 2,200 and 2,500 square foot options. We have the Lakeshore Cabin and the Temp View. And then we also have estate lots, the North Meadow subdivision and the Spring Hill subdivision. So you can build custom homes. We sold one custom home a year ago for around $950,000. Beautiful home. And so if you wanted to buy a cabin and possibly use it part-time, there is the opportunity to rent those.
What about folks that want to, you know, maybe they work here in Park City or they work in Salt Lake mm-hmm. City and somebody wants to live there full-time? Are there people doing that now, and do you have the services and amenities for folks like that?
Absolutely. We have several full-time owners right now. And then we also have people who are looking for second homes who are living in Salt Lake and want to come up and spend their weekends here and recreate on the property and in the Uintas. And so we have all kinds of different owners right now.
You know, it's funny. I moved here from the Bay Area, and this very much felt like a very small town when I first moved here. And I've been here now 8 years. And it's starting to feel a little crowded. Part of it is the town has changed, right? It has Kimball Junction is crazy now.
Well, it's so funny that you say that because the last person I showed out there, that is exactly why they were looking. They felt they live in Ranch Place, and
that's
they
where
felt
I live. Was that me that was there?
And they empty nesters, and they wanted to get away from the hustle and bustle of Kimball Junction. So it's interesting that you say that. I think that's attracting a lot of people as well.
And Mark, what are the other amenities now? It looks like you're planning restaurants, entertainment venues as well.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest new announcement that we're here to make today. We are taking the commercial core of High Star Ranch and converting it into a large conference and event center. And it will evolve over time, but construction has already begun. The demolition of the existing barn in preparation for the new building is underway as we speak. Layton Construction has been hired to do the building, and essentially it's going to be a 30,000-square-foot complex, of which the largest room will be 12,000 square feet that can host up to 1,500 people indoors. When you open up the doors in the summertime and activate the entire facility, the bathrooms and the infrastructure is all being set up to handle up to 2,800 people. Now, that won't happen that often, but we're looking long-term, and we want to be able to have not only small events, but as time goes by, large events. And our interviewing of the destination management companies and the large hotels in town recognize this as a niche that they can't fulfill. Most of the hotels in town, max out at 300 or 400 people. So if you want to get into larger corporate events, large weddings, ticketed concerts, things of this nature, this will be an option for folks.
There's nothing of this size under a roof in Summit County.
That's right, and it's difficult to find a place to permit something like this. And fortunately, Camas City is quite excited about it. They have agreed to do it. They actually prefer this type of sales tax generating versus a large amount of residential components. So essentially, we're going to do a residential component around the conference center, if you will. The cabins that Michelle referred to, there's going to be 50 of them. You can either live in them full-time or rent them just like you could in Park City, nightly, weekly, monthly. And so it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. But the goal is to have it done by January 15th, 2015.
Which you know what happens to coincide with Sundance, I would guess, which was my next question. Right. Is, do you see a tie-in with Sundance? I would think having that capability would be something that would be attractive to them.
Well, as many of you all know, I have a long-running relationship with Sarah Pierce and Sundance, so it's certainly something that we'll talk to them about. I just don't know if they'll be interested at this point. But we'll certainly be doing something. At a minimum,
they have events up in Ogden. Your place is a lot closer than Ogden, that's
right.
For sure.
Right. Well, many of you know my partner owns Patron Tequila, and so the goal I've been handed is to try to get it ready for a large opening night party sponsored by Patron. So that's what I tell all of my suppliers. I said, if you want to be invited to the party, you better
that's
get your
right.
work done.
Now, yeah, and this involves also a restaurant, bar-restaurant component?
Yes, we're going to have people on site anyways managing this fairly large complex. So certainly we're going to have a restaurant complex. We don't know exactly what's going to happen just yet, but it's going to be kind of farm-to-table, ranch-oriented, very friendly to the neighborhood. And it's a little early for us to be able to really be definitive about that. But, yes, there is definitely a large catering kitchen and a restaurant kitchen being installed as part of the facility.
Well, now, does this mean you're abandoning the equestrian component of High Star Ranch, or are there still room for horses?
The property is a mile and a half wide north to south, and we have a smaller barn up to the north that many of y'all may be aware of. It was the old Simpson Ranch. And there's currently about 50 horses up there with two full-time employees. So the equestrian facility will remain. We've dropped dressage, and we're only going to focus on Western. And it's certainly no longer the focal point. It's just another amenity. So it's really going to be more ranch-style living. And it's convenient, close, a great highway system, flat. So we think people will gravitate toward.
Are there amenities out there for people here in Park City maybe that just want to spend an afternoon someplace at the ranch now? Is it currently set up? I know the vision is a year from now there certainly will be. But what about today?
There are amenities out at the ranch right now. There are equestrian trails that take you all the way up to the Uintas. You can take your four-wheeler up to the Uintas, and there is some hunting that has happened on the property, and there will be upland bird hunting. Mark has talked about putting in outpost cabin up in the high country for backcountry camping experiences. A mountain biking trail system is going to be put onto the property. And Mark.
Yeah, well, I want one other thing I wanted to mention to the audience is we affectionately, this is my term, but we are an inclusive, open to the public ranch. So essentially, we are going to evolve into a modern day Sundance resort type facility. We laughingly sometimes say we're the anti country club. So we want to have low dues, we want to have open to the public, and our goal over time will to advance that philosophy. So it will definitely be a place where people can bring their kids on the weekend, and perhaps seasonally we'll do things appropriate to the season. Right. And quite excited about it.
I'm excited about that as well. I think there's definitely a place for that. I mean, when I go to the national parks, right, they all have kind of their marquee hotel, and sometimes if I plan ahead, I can stay there. More often than not, I don't, so I'm staying outside of the park. But it's just a fun place to hang out, and it sounds like that's the vision you have here as well.
Yeah, and many of you all have probably been to Inza Ripken's Harvest Fest, first weekend in October. We've sponsored it at High Star the last 3 years, and it'll be there again this year. Just as an example, on that day last year, we had up to 1,500 people come and bring their children and do different events and face painting and drink a beer in the beer garden and hang out. And we see advancing that kind of concept over time.
And is the market of buyers of cabins and estate lots, et cetera, is it the same market as you appeal to selling in Park City?
What we're seeing, I mean, people are realizing that the quality that we offer at High Star Ranch, it's difficult to find that quality in Park City right now at a reasonable price point. So we're seeing a lot of people looking out at the ranch due to the really beautiful quality of the homes. And so that's a big part of our sales, you know, there. So, you know, finding a home in Park City, it's $600,000 with, you know, good quality is difficult these days.
There's not much of a choice there.
They don't exist anymore.
So
exactly.
I know Blue Sky is doing something as well. Is this something that you think as more ranch-type facilities get built, I could see it where it's complementary versus competitive with you. Is that how you look at it?
Oh, sure. Yeah, the owner of Blue Sky is a good friend of mine, Mike Phillips, and I think that it's just like when you put two restaurants or two bars next to each other, they both benefit. We saw that with the Blind Dog and the Boneyard over at the Yard. They're both up 30% over last year, and there's a lot of synergy that evolves, and we're hopeful that will happen. But we're excited to be part of that area of Eastern Summit County. There's a heavy emphasis from both the state and the county for economic development in that area. And we're glad to lead the way, both Blue Sky and High Star, as it relates to that. And Bob Jasper and that group have been great to work with. And, you know, we're looking forward to an active summer. We'd encourage people to come out and take a look.
Is this a concept that's flying at other ski towns in the West? Are other similar projects happening out a half hour from other major ski resorts?
It'd be my impression that it's very dependent on the location. I think what makes Park City more possible than perhaps a more remote ski town would be the proximity to Salt Lake City. And, of course, with the advent of Montage, St. Regis, Waldorf, and other super high-end hotels, they need these event spaces. So I would say probably not to this extent would be my answer to that, Larry, but there's certainly been other attempts, you know, usually smaller and more Western-oriented.
Okay, well, thanks for joining us, Mark Fisher and Michelle Eastman from Summit Sotheby's with the new concept of different types of housing and different types of events that will now be the focus of High Star Ranch. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. Stay tuned for more.
Thanks for coming in.
And we'll be back to talk about Small Business Week.
Joining the Chamber Bureau.
Small Business
Month.
After this.
Your business with lots of benefits, from business-to-business networking and promotional opportunities to access to our 1,000-plus membership database. Becoming a member of the Park City Chamber Bureau is a great investment for your business. Information on joining is online at visitparkcity.com or call us at 649-6100. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Welcome back to Mountain Money. A good conversation with Mark and Michelle. It'll be interesting to see how that develops over the next, fewer than 9 months away?
Yeah, I mean, there's no way you can miss it on the road to Camas. If you're coming from Oakley, it's on the left. If you're leaving Camas to Oakley, it's on the right. Gigantic fenced-in pasture.
And speaking of business, we have on the phone with us now the regional administrator for the Small Business Association, Matt Verilek. Turns out this is the Small Business Week, and Matt works with the Small Business Administration. Matt, are you there?
No, he's not.
All right. Well, Matt's not there. Larry and I will just have a little conversation while we're waiting.
I had him on the phone, and he disappeared. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, we talked with the manager of Assemble, which was the new shared office business complex at not complex, just shared office space available at Kimball Junction, and you know, it's not the only game in town. There is one that we can see from our window here. The Gateway Office Business Center is doing the same sort of shared office situation in Old Town Park City at the Gateway, and they've been around for 18 years. So now there's shared office opportunities.
Did they call you up and say, hey, Larry, don't forget
Well, it was pointed out that there is such a concept here. So that's quite convenient. There's one here. There's one at the junction. And that's all well and good.
Absolutely. I understand we've got Matt Verilek on the phone now with the Small Business Administration. Matt, welcome to Mound Money.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Matt, I wasn't able to hear you. Are you there?
I'm here.
All right. We have you now. Sorry, audience. We're having a couple technical difficulties. So I mentioned at the top of the hour is Small Business Week. And for folks that think, gee, I didn't know that there was a Small Business Week. I was on Google this morning, and they actually have something on their homepage mentioning that it's Small Business Week. So what are some of the initiatives that are taking place in support of Small Business Week?
Yeah, well, it's exciting that we finally reached that time of year. And, of course, at SBA, we joke that every week is Small Business Week for us. But around the country, we have a number of events to highlight the importance of small businesses in our communities. And at SBA, one of the things that we try to do is also provide resources for people to get into small business and for existing small business owners to deal with challenges they may be facing.
And, Matt, it's pretty amazing when you delve into the numbers. I mean, small business is really what drives the economy here.
Yeah, we believe that's true. We always say that small businesses are the backbone of the economy. Something like half of all workers in this country either own or work for a small business, and something like two-thirds of the net new jobs come from small businesses, which we know are so innovative. And so,
yeah, your website says there are 28 million small businesses, creating nearly two out of every three jobs in our economy.
That's right. And also, if you think about a lot of the big businesses that we know of today and maybe rely upon, they were small once, too. And so we're proud to have been partners in many of those companies, and we feel like by helping more and more small businesses get going and succeed, that certainly serves the economy.
You know, so the way our economy has evolved, there are big businesses and there are big box businesses, the Walmarts, and there are huge online businesses like Amazon that are just chipping away at ma and pa on Main Street. Is this a challenging time to be in a business that competes with the big guys?
Well, I would say any small business owner will tell you it's always a challenging time because the business landscape is always changing. You're right that some of the changes with online and so forth do amount to challenges for small businesses. But then again, if you look at it the right way, it can also be an opportunity. I mean, Amazon in particular, a lot of small businesses sell through that site, and likewise, being able to market across the country or even across the globe creates export opportunities. And so it's a matter of being able to adapt to changing conditions. And at SBA, we feel like we have resources to help folks do that. And we would encourage people to get in touch with us if there's anything we could do to help.
So, Matt, Park City's got a lot of small businesses. What are some of the resources? How can you help small businesses?
So I would encourage people to go to SBA.gov, for example, and check us out, or else get in touch with our district office there in Salt Lake City. That's probably your nearest resource, and they are at 801-524-3209. Just a short summary of what we offer at the SBA, the ways we help. We often will use this acronym, the three C's, and that refers to capital, counseling, and contracting. The capital piece is primarily loan guarantees. We know that financing is the lifeblood of small businesses, and we can provide a guarantee on a loan from a bank or credit union so that the lender has a little bit more comfort in providing financing to businesses that might not otherwise be able to access it. So we know that's important.
You know, one thing that's new since last year when I think we talked to you on the same week is the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. How has that changed the operation of a small business? Because healthcare costs were starting to take down small businesses that couldn't play in that marketplace.
Yeah, you know, a lot of the focus so far about the Affordable Care Act has actually been on the individual marketplace. And that's where we just finished the open enrollment period. But we also want to keep focus on the fact that this creates opportunities for small businesses because, you know, you talk to a lot of small business people and they'll tell you that their employees they also regard as their extended family in many ways. And they would like to be able to provide benefits, including health insurance, and many of them, of course, already do. Well, one of the main benefits of the Affordable Care Act is that it establishes these exchanges which provide an apples-to-apples comparison of different products, hopefully at lower prices now that small businesses are pooled together in these exchanges. And then in addition, if you meet certain conditions, if you're below a certain size, you can also qualify for a tax credit as a business owner, which basically amounts to a discount off the amount that you as the owner are putting towards your employees' coverage. And so really it's just a number of tools to allow small business people to do what in many cases they want to do, and that is to provide affordable coverage.
You know, I mentioned earlier the Google homepage has a Happy Small Business Week, but the quote before it is, "Here's to the dreamers, the doers, the shakers and makers. Happy Small Business Week." and Larry mentioned earlier, you know, small businesses employ 2 out of 3 Americans today. So they're vital to the economy. If you had a magic wand and could get Congress and the Senate to agree, if you could do one thing to make it easier for small businesses to succeed, what would it be?
Ooh, having a magic wand like that probably would require a little thought to make sure that I used it properly. But
it also would be total magic to get the Senate and the House to agree on anything.
Well, they sometimes have difficulty, but what I would say from where I sit at SBA is letting everyone know that we exist and that we have these resources that people can draw upon, because it's amazing. As I travel Utah or I travel the rest of the region that I have responsibility for, I meet so many people who say, "Oh my goodness, I didn't realize you had a loan program," or "I didn't realize you had people who are willing to consult with me for free on a confidential basis to help me achieve my dreams." You talked about the dreamers and the doers. A lot of times you'll find entrepreneurs feel like it's a lonely endeavor. They're the only one that has this idea for a great product, and everyone else either doesn't care or thinks it's dumb or who knows what, and they feel lonely, and they find out that, oh my goodness, there's an agency that exists along with a network of partners to help me succeed. If only I'd known about that sooner. Well, we don't have a major advertising budget or anything like that, so we try to get the word out in other ways. So I would just like everyone to know, if you're thinking about getting into business, there's an agency along with a lot of partners that want to see you succeed, and we would love to work with you.
Well,
and
Matt, hopefully we've helped you with your magic wand request here, at least in Park City, to get the word out. Our guest,
you are the magic wand. That's
there,
great.
There we go. With great power comes great responsibility. Our guest this morning is Matt Verilich. He is the administrator for the Small Business Association. Matt, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you, and happy Small Business Week to everybody out there.
Yes, and you can find out more about the Small Business Administration by going to sba.gov. And this week, if you go to irs.gov, the Internal Revenue site, you'll find information there on two small business webinars that are available for small businesses on filing requirements for independent contractors and for filling out Form 1099s, which are bugaboos for a lot of small businesses to figure all that out. So we will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Longreimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Brett Stimson, Mortgage Assistant for Home Purchases, 801-201-3484. Low Stump Tree Service, Park City's Local Tree Care, 435-200-5730. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Well, thanks for joining us for Mountain Money this morning. We've got a minute or two left, and Doug Wells is the numbers guy. He watches all these government reports that come out on business activity and employment and unemployment, and what are you seeing out there?
You know, 2 weeks ago was kind of bizarre. We got a lot of really important information. We got a jobs report that the headline looked really good, but if you looked inside of it, it was not as good as the headline indicated. And we also had a GDP report that came out that looked horrible. But if you looked inside of it, it was not as bad as it looked. Personal spending continues to grow, which is about two-thirds of the economy. So that's a really important factor. So it was kind of a tale of two cities. One report that was not as good as it looked, and another was important report that was not as bad as it looked.
But in terms of investors, those on Wall Street who invest in this economy, they don't see any negatives, because I think I heard NPR today say the Dow, at least, which is one measurement of stocks, opened at a record high today, and then it popped up 100 points at the open.
It does. And, you know, it doesn't feel like this over the last 5 years, but the reality is about half of the time the market is at all-time highs, because it has a tendency to go higher over time. And again, you don't want to be bouncing in and out based on that, but you also don't want to make your decision, you don't want to make a decision based on the fact that the market's at a high either. It's not that unusual for the market to be at an all-time high.
Sure. And this is a big question to have you answer in 30 seconds. But if you were in the market in the depths of the recession 5 years ago and left your money in, would you have gained it all back by now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's back up above what the highs were prior to the Great Recession.
Okay. Very good. Okay. Well, I want to thank our great sponsors who keep Mountain Money on the air. Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, Park City Chamber, Prudential Real Estate, and San Francisco Design, along with Jones Waldo, Holbrook, and McDonough. We thank all of you for joining us. Our weather forecast looking pretty good. There's, you know, they're still saying maybe a 50% chance
sure
of rain today.
Sure doesn't look like it's
going to
rain.
But I think we can probably discount that pretty
good.
You
opened up Mound Money saying if it's Monday, it's time for Mound Money. If it's May, it's either time for snow or it's time for rain.
Well, how about that view of the mountains this morning?
Beautiful.
Pretty spectacular.
I actually saw some fresh tracks in the snow. So somebody did some hiking and got some skiing in.
And I know in Midway and Wasatch County, for sure, there were downed trees this morning. That winds were fierce enough to bring down some trees, including one of my neighbors that just missed his house by about 10 feet. So,
as much as I like the snow, I'm ready for spring to get into full force now.
Well, it's going to be sunny the rest of the week, and highs warming up through the week to about 75 on Friday. Sounds good. This is KPCW Park City.